So in John 4:35, Jesus said, "Say not ye, there yet 4 months, and then cometh harvest? Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white, all ready to harvest." So tonight I want us to see a little bit of the field of South Africa, particularly the Zulu people. Now, some of the Zulu people live in cities. This is the city of Durban, and the Durban area has about 4 million people. A lot of people come there looking for work. Now, you notice on the left-hand side, there's an apartment building here. Okay, I have my advancer, but my... My laser went...
You didn't use it fast enough, no.
Just want to point something out with the laser. Okay, thank you. So, you see these on the left here, you see these stairs coming down. This is an apartment building here. So, we have Zulus who live in cities and high-rise apartments. And another apartment building just beyond it over here. On the right-hand side is an office building. That's an office building there. So, we have Zulus who live in modern cities like we have... Folks live here in America in modern cities. Then we have areas that are called gated communities. These are becoming increasingly popular because of the crime there. What a gated community is, they have a fence that runs around the whole property, and they have security guards who walk through the area to keep it safe. And so some of the Zulu people live in these kinds of communities. You'll notice on the windows here, you'll see there are burglar bars. These are burglar bars to keep people. We don't have screens on our windows. Of course, that wouldn't keep a burglar out anyway. But we just have the burglar bars. And to keep someone from coming into the house when it's hot, you want your windows open for air circulation. This is an area called a township. As I explained this morning, a township is not like we think of here. Here we have state, county, township, and just a certain piece of land is a township. A township in South Africa is an area where the government is going in and built houses for the poor people. These are four-room houses, believe it or not. There are four rooms in these houses. They have indoor plumbing. There's a bathroom inside. They have paved roads, electric, and, of course, water in the house. And this is a fairly new area, you can tell, because very few of the houses are painted. So as time goes along, it'll become a more colorful area. Then up in the back, you'll see some brick buildings. This is a school. There we go. Another township here. This is obviously a little more established. There's a lot more vegetation here. We're in a subtropical area, if you can see some of the palm trees and so on. But just another close-up view of one of the townships. This is a close-up of one of the houses in the township. Again, notice the burglar bars over the windows. A lot of people also have burglar bar on the door. This house doesn't. But on the left, you'll notice the tile roof here. There are different styles of roofs. But over here on the left, this tile roof. Now, the thieves love this kind of roof because these are terracotta tiles, and they just lay on top of each other. They aren't screwed down or anything. And so all a thief has to do is lift those and then come in through the ceiling. So thieves actually love these kinds of roofs. Our neighbor man one day in the middle of the night heard a noise on his roof, and he got his flashlight, went outside and shined it up on the roof. There's a guy lifting the tiles, getting ready to come inside, and he shouted at the guy, and the guy ran off. So we've never had him do it at our house, but we have had neighbors that happened to. This is what is called a squatter area. Now, you notice it's right in the area of Durban. These are the buildings of the city of Durban right there on the hill. And people come looking for work. They can't afford to rent a place or buy a place. And so they just squat. They get pieces of tin or wood, whatever they can find, and they put up these shacks. There's no electricity. What some of them do, they illegally tap into the electric lines and run up wire down to their house. Sometimes children get killed because of bare wires that get exposed. They have no proper sanitation. For running water, the city has put in a tap, a public tap. They can go and draw water, proper clean water from a tap there. But these are the conditions. The very poor live in these kinds of conditions. This was a homeless man that we ministered to. His name is Welcome, his English name. And someone came to him one day. It was wintertime. It gets down to 38 degrees at night. And this man's living in this open porch. Someone let him stay on their porch. You see it's open behind him. I'm standing in an open doorway. And all he had to cover himself at night was a tarp. Someone gave him a canvas to throw over himself. And, of course, he just sleep fully clothed. And he unfortunately got into alcohol, had a good job. He was an assistant plumber, and through alcohol lost his job. And so we went and we took him some food and preached the gospel to him. And over a period of a couple months, kept explaining the gospel to him. And I was working up at the church one day, and he came up and he said, "Pastor, I decided I want to get saved." So I sat down with him and talked to him about the gospel, what it meant to be saved. And he said, "I'm willing to turn my back on the old life and the ancestors and receive Christ." And so he did. And then he passed away about a few months later. Eventually went off to live with some relatives and passed away a few months later. We're so thankful he came to know Christ as his Savior before he died. These are some homeless boys in the city of Durban, and it's a bit of a problem there. We have these, the chances are about 95% they're on drugs, and there are shelters for them to go to, but they don't want to obey the rules in the shelter, and so they live on the street. They go to the traffic lights and beg for money. And the child services there tell you the worst thing you can do for these children is give them money or food. Don't help them, because by helping them, you're supporting their lifestyle. What they need to do is get so desperate, they go back to the shelters, get under some authority, have a structured lifestyle. But as it is, they'll live on the street, they'll never learn to read or write, and destroy their life with drugs. So it's a hard situation, but again, these are souls who need to know the Lord as their Savior. Again, Jesus said, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white, all ready to harvest. These are all souls that need Christ as their Savior. This is a home of a lady who attended our church. She passed away now, but the lady in the blue dress, dear lady who loved the Lord, and this was her home, and got a little one-room home, about four yards by 4 yards. Inside, it's her bedroom, her kitchen, her living room, everything, all in one. And to get water, this is her water tank in the front here. This is a 200-liter water tank, and that's where she gets her water from. Then and when she washes her clothes in a basin like this, and that's also the basin inside. She'll wash herself there in the room out of a basin. Wash your clothes in a basin. So you can see someone's done laundry here. Over on the right are some clothes hanging there on the wash line. So very common conditions for she. You notice she does have electric. You'll see the power line coming into the house there. So although she doesn't have any plumbing indoors, she does have electricity. This is a man that was in our church. He also passed away, but he wanted to build a block house. And so we began to ask people for any leftover bricks they had. So you see a few different styles of bricks. He made this. He's leaned on cement blocks that he made himself. And eventually he plastered that, so when it's all finished and plastered, it just looks like a very nice new house. You don't notice all the different styles of bricks and so on. On the left is his old house. It's a mud house. There are two different ways they build the mud houses. In this style, what they do is they put a post in the ground, and then over here they put another post in the ground. And on the front, they nail on these strips of wood. Then on the back side, they also nail on strips of wood. In fact, if you look at the window opening, you'll see some of the strips going through. You never cut them off. And then they fill that cavity with rocks. Then eventually they'll plaster it. They'll take mud and mix in some cement and plaster. He didn't get to plastering this yet, but he'll plaster that. And the interesting thing is, when you look at a house, it's hard to tell if it's a block house or a mud house. Once they've plastered it, mud house looks just as good as a brick house. I'll explain in a minute why the mud houses are more problematic and why people, if they have the money, like to build a block house. Here was one morning I was out preaching with the megaphone and I just took this shot of the valley in front of me. You notice this tin roof here has a lot of things piled on it. Why do you think they pile everything on the roof?
Wind.
Okay. To hold the roof down. If you don't have enough nails, you just put bricks and blocks and wood and tires and whatever you have, you lay it up there to hold the roof down. Now, you notice there's a piece of carpet. That will help. This is old tin they got, and it has some holes in the tin. So it'll still leak, but not as much as if they didn't have carpet there. On the right side, you see there's a tarp. They got a tarp to put down, and so this is how they do it. Now, the folks on the right, they were able to afford brand new tin, and so their roof will be good for quite a few years yet. But just to give you, again, an idea of the conditions of some of the people. By the way, this shot was taken in wintertime, because you see it's kind of brown and drab in the background. Our winter there is our dry season. We don't get any rain for 4 months. And so it gets cold and things get brown. Then when we get rain and it warms up, everything turns green. This is an area of Embo where we've been ministering. Some people built some shacks for people to live in. This is the homestead here. These are where the people who own this property. When I say own it, they have permission from the tribe to use it. The chief really owns the land. But this is the homestead here. Then they built these shacks for people. They rent these out. So right here's a home, here's a home, here's a home, here's a home, and here's a home. So there are four or five homes right there. And they don't pay much for rent, but they'll pay a little bit each month to the landlord. And then they're out. Here's a little outhouse, and up here's another outhouse. By the way, this was built by World Vision. If anybody tells you World Vision is a Christian organization, don't believe it. They are a welfare organization. But they came in and they built an outhouse for every home in our tribal area, there was never one word of the gospel, never a Bible given out, never a gospel tract, nothing. There was no word. All it was a social program. So World Vision is a nice social program, but they really are not Christian. In fact, the guy they hired to head up this project hated the gospel, hates me because I preach the gospel. And in a certain sense, they're almost anti-Christian in the project they did in our area. But they are a welfare, a social organization that helps people. But as far as the gospel, they don't do anything in that regard. This is the other type of mud house that people make. They take a type of clay and they make a block out of it, and then they use them just like you would a cement block. And we have a guy that is at Bible College, excellent. I mentioned him this morning. This is his mother's house that he inherited. His mother came to our church. She passed away, and so at 15, he started living on his own and finished high school living on his own. And this is the family home. They never had money to plaster it. Now, the problem with the mud blocks is when we get a lot of rain, we'll have sometimes where it'll rain every day for a month. Now, it doesn't rain all day every day. We'll get rain every day for a month. Guess what happens to the mud, these mud blocks, when you get a lot of moisture? They soften. And one day a friend of mine called me and he says, "Pastor Don, can you come out here? Do you have any tarps or tin or something?" He said, "My wall collapsed." So I went out to his house, and sure enough, the whole wall was just a pile of mud at the bottom. And he needed something to support his roof because the roof was sagging and about to collapse. And this is the problem with the mud walls, is they get soft when we get a lot of rain. This is a homestead. And again, you'll notice the steep hill here. This is our area, Valley of a Thousand Hills. All these houses here are the family. These are the family homes. So this round house we call Rondavel. That's the kitchen. And then they probably even have a living room area in the one house here, and then the rest will be bedrooms. These houses here are rental rooms that they've built. And there are 9 rental rooms across here. They're building another 2 room there. And so again, these are about square, the little room. So it's about 4 yards by 4 yards. Now, up to 4 people will live in there. If they have more children, if they have some money, they'll rent the next room and have 2 bedrooms. If they can't afford that, then they'll probably send a couple of kids off to live with another relative somewhere else. And so these are the conditions. Again, here's an outhouse, there's another outhouse, and another one here, so they're kind of dotted all over the countryside. One of those necessary rooms. This is inside the kitchen now. And if they don't have electricity, if they have electric, then they'll have usually a 2-plate burner they'll use. But where they have no electric, they put a little 3-legged stand and then put the pot on top. Here they're cooking porridge. It's a type of cornmeal. It's the most common food for the poor people there. And if they add a lot of water, it's like making a porridge kind of like cream of wheat. Then if they add less water, it gets clumpy. And they like to eat that with maybe a bit of stew, if they have a little stew or some vegetables. If they add less water, it gets very crumbly. And they like to put some gravy or sour milk with that. So it took me a while to learn to enjoy sour milk. Now, sour milk isn't milk left out to go sour. It's processed. It's processed sour milk. It's actually safe and sanitary and all that. But it took me about 10 years before I learned to enjoy it. About 6 years before I learned to enjoy it. But I actually do now. I love to have this, what they call putu with sour milk. It's actually very nice. What do you do if you have a lot of people to feed and you just have these pots to cook in? Well, this was an occasion. There were 400 people that came here. I got to preach the gospel here. And so they have these big pots. They've killed a cow. And over here is where they butchered the cow. The guys are still over there cutting up the meat, and they'll put it on the fire to cook. And some of the meat is in these pots. There's potatoes and vegetables and rice and meat in those pots, and enough to feed everybody. And this is a Christian man. Every year he kills a cow, puts on a feast for the community, invites someone to come and preach the gospel to them. And so I got to preach the gospel to this group of folks who had showed up. It was a great opportunity. When you get out to the rural areas, you have people who plow just as they did in the time of the Bible, you know. There are areas that have tractors, but the very rural people still use horses and cattle. And I like to use this picture as an illustration of Matthew 11, 28 to 30, where Jesus said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you." Now, you notice these cattle here, these oxen, are yoked together. If you look closely here, you'll see there's a piece of wood that goes across the necks of these animals. Then there's a rope that ties underneath to hold that. And so all 6 here are pulling this load. Now it's empty at the moment, but he'll fill that sled up with something. And not one animal has to bear all the weight. The yoke is designed not as a burden. The yoke is designed as a blessing to help you with the burdens of life. If you will yoke yourself to Christ, if you will walk with Christ, he's there to help you with the burdens of life. Now, the picture of a person who hasn't taken the yoke is this horse here. He's pulling all the weight all by himself. They're plowing there, actually, is what they're doing. And he has to pull that weight all by himself. So if you don't walk with Christ, you're bearing the burden all alone. But if you walk with Christ and take his yoke, he's there and helps you through life, helps you with the burdens. Such a blessing to know Christ as Savior and to walk with him. In the rural areas, when they need to go get water, it's a lady's job. And believe it or not, it's easier to carry something on your head than in your arms if you have to walk a long distance. Now, these girls have been doing this since they're 5 or 6. And so they are bringing water back to the homestead. Now, you notice this lady here got hers a little off balance. So just kind of cock her head. But this is how they carry water. Now, if the guys need to get water, they kind of cheat. Whoops, sorry, can you go back one? I did two pictures. Can you? There we go. This is what the boys do if they need to get water. So, or they'll use a wheelbarrow. If they don't have donkeys, they use a wheelbarrow. But the boys kind of cheat when they get their water. But here they are. You see all the jugs, the water jugs there. They're coming back to taking that water back to their homestead. This is the white van that you see sitting here is a South African taxi, 14-passenger van. And they go everywhere through the country, and then people only have to pay, you know, it's not so expensive. It's not like hiring a private taxi. And they go everywhere, and people pay their little bit to go here and there. However, a working person, one of the poor people who has just a kind of they're uneducated, have an unskilled job, they will spend between 25 and 30% of their income just riding the taxi to and from work. So if they happen to get a job within walking distance of their home, they feel very blessed because they save at least 25% of their income just being able to walk instead of riding the taxi. Also, in the front of this is a cage with some chickens in it. Now, you can go to the store and buy chickens. In fact, up on the sign here is a butchery, and I think it says meat and chicken there. So you can buy chickens in the store just like here, refrigerated or frozen. But a lot of people like to buy them live because you can use all of the parts. I mean, they even use the head and the feet of the chicken. They cook it and get a broth out of it to use for gravy. And in the stores, they actually sell walkie-talkies. Now, a walkie-talkie in South Africa is different than what you're thinking of. A walkie-talkie is the head and the feet of the chicken. Okay? You get it? The feet are the walkie. The head is the talkie. And I kid you not, when I first heard this, I thought it was a joke. I laughed. I thought this was a joke. I was at the grocery store one day, and in the frozen section, they had a little plastic packet that said walkie-talkie. And it was the head and the feet of the chicken. And they really sell them. So now if you buy a live chicken, you get everything. You know, you get the gizzard and all the innards and the meat and the feet and the head, and you can use all of the parts. So people like to take these home and butcher them themselves. We do get snow up on the mountains. In our area, we don't. 38 degrees is about the coldest we get where we live. But about an hour away on the mountains, 2 or 3 times each year, they get snow. And we've driven people up a couple times that had never seen snow. It's always fascinating to see their reaction. Now, these homes have no central heating. They will use an electric heater or a little gas heater, or maybe if they have a rondavel, like up here, they'll actually use wood and create a wood fire. But it gets chilly for these people. They just pile extra blankets at night to sleep. And then these are some ladies, again, gathering wood is a lady's job. And you can see it's cold in this area, the area where they have snow. They'll take that home, use that for heat and also for cooking. The problem with the burning the wood is they don't have any ventilation in these rondavels. It just goes up and hangs in the ceiling. And, man, you sit in there, it burns the eyes terribly. And so we're not surprised when people get to middle age or a little bit older and they start to have eye trouble. If they grew up in this area where you're sitting in a smoke-filled room, it really does affect the eyes. Coming back to the city now, we have some apartment complexes. And one apartment is 2 sections. So two of these sections where you see 2 sets of windows, that's 1 apartment. But thousands and thousands of people living in these apartments. So again, souls that need to know Christ as their Savior. Again, back down in Durban near the beachfront, you see the palm trees here. And in this subtropical area, large apartment buildings, Zulus who live here in these areas. And again, many, many souls who need the Savior. Jesus said, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white, all ready to harvest. We're doing what we can. We just can't reach them all. Pray that God will raise up more missionaries to go to the Zulus and reach them with the gospel. We have grocery stores there. They're very much like America. This is actually Karen right here and another missionary lady and her daughter. They're heading into the grocery store there. And we just don't have they're modern. We just don't have the selection that you would have. So, like, we want to go buy cereal, dry cereal for breakfast. We'll have maybe 15 choices instead of 50 or 100 or however many you have here. And they're modern stores, just the choice isn't quite as great. This is inside one of the stores. It was Easter time. They kind of decorated the front, but here's at the checkout counters. So we do have modern stores. In fact, the little town we live in has three of them. For a while, we only had one, and then somebody else said, that's a good idea, and they brought one in. And so we actually have three grocery stores. There are some people, though, who sell outside. There's someone who just put up a little tent to protect from the sun and possible rain and sell their vegetables there right by the road. So it's very common to have little stands like this by the road. Again, some people now sell their goods at the traffic lights. Now, in South Africa, these are called robots. A traffic light is called a robot. A robot there isn't a little machine that marches around. A robot is a traffic light. And here's a guy selling oranges. The other guy just has flyers, advertisements. They pay these guys to, they'll pay them about $2 or $3 for a day to go out and hand out flyers at the traffic light. If you want a haircut, here you go, guys. You got six choices. And they usually give ladies about 18 choices, okay? But ladies are more into the hair, you know? But down in Durban, they have, this is your hair salon, and you just say to the guy, I want this one right there. That's what you get. Kids love to play over there, just like they do here. This was a vacation Bible school that we did, and doing a beanbag race here. In the background, you'll notice some of the taxis. The neighbor man has a business, and he has a taxi business. So those are some of his taxis. Here's some kids playing in the street. They don't have a lot of toys like American kids do. And we were on our way to Bible study. This is at Burlington where we have our one Bible study. And these kids were just playing in the street. And I just snapped a picture here. You're not surprised when there's sickness. You know, they play in this mucky water. And it just isn't surprising that people get sick. But these are the conditions that the kids have when they play. They're just having a blast there playing in the water. Now, this is a school, the high school. What do you notice about the way they're dressed? Uniforms, school uniforms. This is a public school. All of the public schools, in fact, all the schools that I know of in South Africa, all wear uniforms. It's kind of a strange idea to a lot of Americans. Actually, once we've been there, I like the idea. It's much more neat. It's orderly. By the way, these are boys and girls. Some people get confused because, you know, the women have such short hair. But you'll see some of the skirts here on the girls. Now, funny enough, some of the girls wear ties to school. They don't have to. There are some here that don't. There she doesn't, and another one here doesn't. The guys have to wear a tie, but the girls don't. But they like to, and they don't to church, they don't to anywhere else, only to school. And I asked someone one day, why do you wear a tie to school? They said, well, we think it looks nice. So it's just a cultural thing. Some of them do, even though they don't have to. But they all wear school uniforms, and it's kind of nice. It gives a neater, cleaner look to the students.
Why the white shirt?
Okay, here's some more white shirts. It's just part of the uniform. It's what they say. Oh, okay. They have blue and white. What they do is, it's funny with this school. Schools kind of have their own rules. They're supposed to wear a white shirt on Wednesday and a blue shirt other days. So the colors of this school are blue. And so this guy obviously didn't have a clean blue shirt. So he wore a white shirt. He won't get in trouble for it. So two of the students there, obviously they just didn't have clean blue shirts that day. And so they just wore a white one. But they're supposed to where Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, they're supposed to wear blue shirts, and on Wednesday's white shirt day. So just, I don't know how that developed. And then again, there's another school here. This is an elementary school, and their colors are green and gold. And so, not technically. They were up until 94. But once the blacks were allowed to vote, they integrated the schools. So the former white schools often run about 15 to 20% black people. The thing is that everyone pays school fees. All the government pays for are teacher salaries. So the school has to raise their own money for buildings, electric and water, and anything else that they need. And so all schools have fees. So the schools with a better education obviously are going to have higher fees. So the poorer people just can't afford the fees at what they call the former white schools that are now generally 15 to 20% blacks going there. So if people can afford it, they send them to the what they call the English-speaking schools. What they do in these schools, they're taught these, because this is a Zulu area, we have nine tribal groups in South Africa. So if you were in a Sotho area, they'd teach you in Sotho. But at elementary school, they're taught in their mother tongue, and they're taught English as a language. When they get to high school, they're taught in English, and their mother tongue then becomes one of the languages they study. And so you do find quite a few people who speak English in South Africa, and it helps with their jobs if they can speak English. The drawback is, when they get to high school, because all the instruction is in English and all the tests are in English, if they don't get a good grasp on the English language, they fail. And so the dropout rate between 8th and 12th grade is like 50% of the students. When they get to 12th grade, the pass rate of those who pass is, I think, countrywide 60-something percent, but you only have to have 35% to pass. Now, if you want to go to university, you have to get a 40%. But it's a challenge because for them, you know, doing everything in English is quite hard. So we do have a high dropout rate in high school. Again, Jesus said, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white, all ready to harvest. I mentioned this morning, I get to go to these schools and preach and give the gospel to the students. And they actually love it when I come. I use an object lesson when I go. And sometimes later, even the teachers will remind me of one of the sermons I preached to the kids. So I'm not only preaching to the kids, I'm even reaching the teachers. So there you go. Those are some ideas of life in South Africa.